Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are all here with me today. We have a fascinating guest in store for you. We're going to have a magical conversation today. But first, of course, we have my blog post from a couple of years ago. Let me read that for you and talk about it, and then we'll bring our guest on. And this one is a kind of a cool one. Today's blog post is entitled, "Magical Meetings Are Rare and So Precious." Making a special connection with someone is rare. Yet every now and then we come across someone who just feels right to us, who it feels natural to be with. And we know that this relationship feels different. It might be just a friend or a mentor, or it can end up being a lover. The person might feel like a long lost brother or sister. What type of relationship it is does not really matter, for it is all about the resonance we feel with the other person that truly matters, and the resonance they feel with us. Intimacy is created in a very short time because the sense of safety is immediate. There are no airs and no posturing with each other, just a palatable presence. Because these types of connections are so rare, we treat them as more precious than gold, as more important than our own advancement. We look to support them in any way we can, and they look to do the same, not out of obligation or a sense of responsibility. The action comes from our heart and from a pure place inside us. We may not know why we feel this connection and love for another. Some say that we could have known this person in another life, or that there is some ancient history in their bloodline. No one really knows. All we know for certain is that the experience of it is of it because it is so out of normal life. These meetings are magical and precious beyond measure, and we always try to treat them that way. The funny thing is, we can have that kind of connection at any moment when we are truly ready for it. They can come to us when we least expect it or most in need of it. Or perhaps they show up in our lives at the most random of times. When it happens is not as important as just recognizing that it happened, that there is someone special in front of us, and listen to our heart's message, even if on the outside the appearance is not what we would normally pay attention to. For there is real magic in the world. We just have to keep our eyes open to it. Have you had a magical connection with someone lately? Were you present enough to recognize it when it happened? So I wrote this blog post a couple of years ago. And it was just after meeting somebody at an event. And we just, me and this guy, we just had a wonderful conversation, a deep connection. And it wasn't like we had that much in common. Like, I was a native New Yorker. He grew up somewhere else. We had very different life paths. But we just felt the same way about so many things. And it was really just that moment of connection and that moment of realization was very precious for me. And it really felt like this is a soul brother to me. And I was present to it in the moment. I was really enjoying it. I believe they were too. And the funny thing was, like, I don't even think we're still in touch. I mean, I know we met and we were connected for a little while, but it's actually keeping the relationship going wasn't nearly as important as just that initial experience, as the feeling that just came with that connection. And it really just kind of struck me at the time. And that it reminded me of other times in my life where, especially when I was younger, I'd meet somebody and we'd joke around like we had known each other our whole lives and we had just met. And just remembering those precious moments. You know, at the time, especially when you're younger, you don't always appreciate it. You're not always as present to how valuable those little magical moments are. But as you get older, they start to mean more to you. And yeah, and so it was my inspiration for writing this blog post. Because it's one of those like little things in life that add so much flavor to the world and to the world we live in. But how often do we not recognize it? How often do we like, you know, smile at it and then we move on with our lives and we don't take the time to really hold it in our hearts and really recognize how special and precious it is. So I guess my invitation for this week is look at your life, look at the people you've met over the years. Whether you're still in touch with them or not, it doesn't matter. How many times have you had, and I'm sure it's not many, but just that little magical moment where you connected with someone where it just lit up your heart. And again, it could be a coworker, it could be a friend. It doesn't have to be a partner or a lover. It just needs to be someone that there was some sort of internal recognition of spirit that really lifted up both of your soul. So that's my blog post for this week. The title is Magical Meetings Are Rare and So Precious. And of course, you can find my blog on my personally branded website, theconsciousconsultant.com. And of course, on the radio station's website as well at talkradio.nyc/blog. And if you like my blog post, you know, I have a whole book of really good ones called Everyday Awakening. So don't forget to check those out. All right. Now, it is my pleasure to welcome to the show David Pantano, historian, researcher, and a leading voice in exploring the depths of Western esoteric traditions, particularly the Italian Hermetic lineage. Based in Toronto, David has devoted his life to uncovering and translating rare teachings that bridge ancient wisdom and modern consciousness, offering a path that is both scholarly and deeply experiential. David shares his insights from his extensive body of work, including two of his latest books we're going to talk about, Alchemical Hermeticism, The Secret Teachings of Marco Daffi, thank you, and on initiation, and the Hermetic Book of the Dead, Secret Rituals for Navigating the Astral Plane in the Afterlife. Nice. Thank you. Drawing from figures such as Giuliano Kremertz and the Fraternity of Miriam, he explores how these traditions were never meant to remain abstract philosophies, but rather living systems designed to guide individuals towards direct experience of the transcendent. His work reveals a forgotten dimension of Western spirituality, one rooted in ritual, inner transformation, and the disciplined pursuit of self-realization. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, David.
Thank you very much, Sam. And it's great to be here with you. That was a very inspiring opening monologue there. And I could resonate with many of the points that you brought up. And I look forward to our conversation. And over to you.
Yeah, same here, David. Same here. Somehow, I just taking these blog posts in order, but somehow they always line up perfectly with whoever I happen to be talking to that day. I always like to start off giving the audience just a little bit of background, a little bit of perspective on my guest. So I just have to ask, like, what initially got you interested in these esoteric Western traditions? Everyone has sort of their own unique path that brings them to this kind of work. I'm just curious what brought you to research this stuff.
I mean, that's a pretty broad question. Because there, in my case, there wasn't one particular instance. I
Okay.
didn't have an awakening. The clouds didn't part, and a hand came down and said, you need to follow this path. I think I just by as long as I can remember, in terms of my own self-awareness, I was just very curious, highly curious of the mysterious component to life. So not just what the inputs from our five senses, but from our inner senses as well. So I've got recollections when I was a youth, preschool, that of my awareness, of my thinking, of what's trying to understand the phenomena that's before me, in broader terms than what those inputs, those physical inputs provided. So I think that was the impetus. And then as I got older and started reading more, it kind of calibrated my inner radar in terms of what I was interested in, and what really resonated with me, and what were some of these truth propositions that I could validate myself. So it was more of like an inner, a developmental inner awakening to trying to get a sense, an experience of a dimension that's more than what the five senses could provide. I know that's kind of broad and general, but that it's really difficult in a format like this to pinpoint any one component that really triggered my quest in this field. And I do look at it as a quest. I do look at it as we are, in my case, as a seeker, as an argonaut of light, and specifically of inner light. And having that understanding of knowing thyself, of what you're interested in, and tying it into a higher purpose than just the I, me, mine, directed me towards an orbit, towards a tangent that I discuss in my books and that I write about.
But I think this is important for people to recognize, because although many of my guests got put sort of on their quote unquote spiritual path because of a particular incident or there was one thing that moved them over, that there are a lot of people who end up sort of falling into this, I'll say, just sort of little bit step by step through a very gradual process, that it wasn't any one big thing. But it just slowly but surely we kind of get drawn into it. Because the same as with me, it wasn't like there was any one big thing that did it. It was a lot of things. I mean, there were some big experiences over my time, but it was really more sort of a gradual one thing led to another, led to another, led to another, led to another. And to me, that's sort of a very organic way that a lot of people come to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's a nice way of putting it. And as I mentioned earlier, so that was sort of the initial spark, the impetus. And as I matured into my teens and started reading, there were certain currents of knowledge or of a tradition that I gravitated towards, where there were affinities. And that's specifically in this Italian Hermetic tradition that really took root with the rediscovery of the Hermetic text, the Corpus Hermeticum, in the mid-1400s. And it was translated into Latin by a Florentine scholar named Marsilio Ficino. And those books there, I happened were available at my local library. And when I was reading to my, I connected to them, and it gave me an opportunity to articulate some of these concepts that at that stage of my life, I wasn't fully available to articulate because I didn't have that knowledge and didn't have those life experiences, but which resonated me at a deeper level. And sort of that was sort of like the first awakening that there's these feelings or these intuitions, these experiences that you have of your inner conscious, that they can be articulated into a doctrine, into a philosophy that makes sense, and that is open for a seeker to validate or not. And I'm not the type of person, I come with as a Westerner, I come with a very skeptical basis to myself. I don't drink, I don't swallow everything that's presented in front of me. I'm open to ideas, I'm open to concepts, open to perspectives. But with me, for such a things to really to take root, I need to validate that. So having firsthand experiences, to put the practice or the practicum next to the doctrine or concept is sort of like the modus operandi that rooted in me at an early age.
Wonderful, wonderful. I always like to be clear for our audience because I have a very broad, wide audience. So for those people who maybe heard the term but don't really understand what it means, what is Hermeticism?
Well, Hermeticism it's a theosophy in the sense that it's a philosophy, it's a practice, it's a somewhat of a religion in this in the doctrinal sense of religious mean religious legio means to tie. So it's to tie yourself. In the book that I write about alchemical hermeticism, it's a gnosis. It's a path towards experience, a transcendent state, an altered state of consciousness than one that you wouldn't be able to experience otherwise. So there are a set of practices. There are a set of formulating the mind, or what you call forma mentis, is to calibrate the mind to be able to pick up these subtle energies and that trigger that set off a series of experiences that you wouldn't be able to experience otherwise in a normal Euclidean sense of the world that is of three dimensions or of a linear experience of life, put it that way.
And I mean, you mentioned these texts from the 1400s. How old is this concept of Hermeticism?
Well, it historical documentation traces it back to Alexandria, in the, I guess, the post Pharaonic time of Egypt. So we're talking about first to the 5th century CE or AD, if that's what you want. The oral tradition goes back even further than that. So there are a number of the central texts are about 18 books that have been recovered so far of the Corpus Hermeticum that talk about a revelation between a divinity or a metaphysical entity called Hermes Trismegistus,
That's majestic.
that in the Egypt that the Egyptian ancient Egyptians called Thoth, and the Greco-Romans called Hermes or Mercury. And these books actually talk about that experience about this basically series of dialogues, at least in the first few books, where an individual seeker comes to real have an experience like we talked about, like you at the beginning of our conversation, where certain aspects of truth that he wouldn't know otherwise are discussed with this entity in a transcendent state. So it's very much a philosophy. It's a revelation. It's a series of practices to be able to systematically achieve these types of states of gnosis. It's not so much a religion in the sense that it's, there are hierarchies and so forth. It's a theosophy because it talks about the divine being that plane of being that transcends the three dimensions that we experience in our ordinary senses.
Gotcha. Now your book, Alchemical Hermeticism, the subtext is the secret teachings of Marco Daffy on initiation. So who was Marco Daffy, and how did you come to find out about him?
Okay, so in this Italian tradition that I talked about that really reawoke, because as I mentioned, that Hermeticism has its origins in Alexandria, Egypt, in the first few centuries of the Common Era. And then in the Western, with the overthrow of the Roman Empire in the West, what we call the Dark Ages, those texts were lost. So there were, prior to that, the Dark Ages, there were scholars, individuals who would be immersed or initiated in these hermetical doctrines and practices, but that became lost for about 1,000 years, and until a monk in Greece uncovered a text in a monastery that contained 15 books of the Corpus Hermeticum, and they were written in a hieratic language of Greek, and they were brought over to Florence to this court of the de Medici, and the leading scholar of the day, Marsilio Ficino, translated the 15 books, and then about three or four other books were rediscovered since that time, and they've been and that sort of set off the basis of the Western esoteric tradition, was that the translation of the Corpus Hermeticum in Florence, and a number of scholars and ecclesiastics came to immerse themselves in his book because of the lost wisdom that was contained within them. So there, that nucleus of Hermetic tradition took root in Italy, and it kind of over there's a there's sort of like a esoteric chain that continued since the time of Ficino that included well-known figures in the esoteric circles such as Giordano Bruno, Cagliostro. All the way up to the 18th century, where we come across this magus called Giuliano Kremers, who was a Neapolitan magus who focused on his application of Hermeticism on healing. So similar to what Paracelsus would have done, the Swiss thaumaturge back in the 1500s, and he Kremers. Founded this school called the Fraternity of Miriam to be able to for individuals to enter into this school to get the basic practices of Hermeticism and to apply it for healing, for their own healing of themselves and for others who ask for help because of traditional medicine wasn't sufficiently healing them. So that was sort of the foundational or the context. One of the I w wouldn't say a student, but an initiate named Prince or Baron Ricciardo Ricciardelli, who was Roman based, who was contemporary with Kremers, started a correspondence with him to become initiated, to learn these practices. And he took these practices to another level. And he applied it more, in his case, not so much onto therapeutic means, but more for divination, and for theurgy, and for his own self-healing, that he believed that when he would enter into these transcendent states, he would have some past life experiences where he was in a certain context where a transgression occurred that he was responsible for, and that he felt or that he experienced from this reliving music, this past life transgression, had instilled a karmic impediment to his self-development, to his evolution, and that his role or his purpose in his current incarnation was to make right that wrong, so he could evolve in his own spiritual trajectory.
Now, as you
So
said, this
Marco
was.
Daffy learned some of these practices from Kremers and from the school that Kremers belonged to, and he took it to do internal work called his internal laboratory, to and he that he wrote and that he wrote in various letters and his own journals that expressed his own gnosis to identify what those impediments were and how he could correct them in an astral setting.
Now, this is back in the 1800s, right? This is long
No,
before
this
the
is
New
actually in the
Age.
1900s.
Oh, in the
This would be
1900s.
so Kremers was to give some timelines. He was born in 1861, died in 1930.
1930.
Marco Daffy, who so Marco Daffy is the name that his astral name, or the name that when he was went into this past life regression, he identified that in a past life he was this a priest in this court of ancient Egypt, and his name was Marco Daff, and he converted it into a more of Italian sounding name called Marco Daffy. And
Gotcha.
that there was this transgression that he was responsible for that put a curse or put a karmic impediment to him, which really infected his personality, specific his emotional personalities, and that affected his relations with his wife and with other family members. And when he went into these trances, that he was able to uncover these experiences on multiple occasions and then receive instructions from the school that Kremers was belonged to, called the Egyptian Order, in terms of how to remedy them. So these pra inner practices form the basis of his alchemical hermeticism. So the alchemy behind it was to transform, as we know, alchemy is the art of transforming lead into gold. So for in Daffy's case, it was the transformation of his defective character into a perfectible character, into one of balance and equilibrium, so he could realize what his true purpose in his life was. So that was the foundational components. It's written in a very highly philosophical manner. This is not, some new age visionary type of thing. It's written with very in a Neoplatonic terminology that's very specific, and you can add in, I guess, some concepts of Jungian as well to provide the terminological context in terms of how he discovered what his inner defects were, and how he went inside himself to convert those vices or karmic impediments into virtues.
Now, this was the early 1900s. So, concepts like karma and like past lives is a very Eastern sort of concept. But were these concepts sort of these preserved through ancient times through these Hermetic texts, or did Daffy have or Kremitz have some exposure to Eastern stuff so they were
Yeah,
able to frame
that's a
things?
great question, Sam. So one of the features of this tradition of the Miriam that Kremers and to a lesser extent Daffy associated was their bringing up to date the terminology. So filtering the technology of old outdated terms with some of the newer ones. So in the world of ancient Hermeticism, karma wasn't a concept that was used. It was fatum, the fate of your soul, the weight of your soul. But because Kremers wrote at the turn of the century, Daffy wrote up in the 50s and the 60s, they use more precise terminology that modern readers would understand to be able to bring it into a more modern context. So that was one of the advantages or benefits of their work is that they took some of these arcane philosophical terms and brought them up to date to make it more accessible for the modern reader.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I just want to ask you a couple of questions around when you talk about them putting themselves into a trance state, like what's involved with that, just to give us a
Sure.
little taste of it. And then I'd like to really talk about the Hermetic Book of the Dead. All right.
Okay, for sure.
All right, great. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Wednesday now, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on talkradio.nyc. And we'll be right back with our guest, David Pantano, author of the books Alchemical Hermeticism and the Hermetic Book of the Dead, in just a moment.
Are you a spiritual seeker? Are you interested in expanded states of reality? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will dive into these topics with authors, teachers, researchers, and guides. Tune in at our new time, Wednesdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Wednesdays, 12 noon Eastern, on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
And welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. So David, you spoke before about how people like Kremitz and Daffy, that for them to really, I guess, understand themselves or to work through sort of some spiritual challenges, they would put themselves into sort of an altered state. So how would they do that? What kinds of practices would they use to help them to sort of access a different level of understanding?
Okay, sure. So there's a technique in the Miriam called the state of mag. And what that is, Kremers defines it as a lucid state of trance. So basically, it's a state of love, of not erotic love, but of a universal, transcendent, amorous state. That
A
creates sort of
spiritual
like
love.
a spiritual love, like an agape that the Greeks would call, that the initiate would activate that create this inner corridor that their consciousness could detach from the more physical and somatic environments to go internally, and that would open up would enter into this astral field, and given the inclinations, given the training of the initiate, that they're accessible to inner experiences, figures and images and theurgical entities that are part of the environment that of their state of development. So the state of mag, which can be activated in a number of ways. It can be activated by doing meditation, doing a silent meditation where the mind, your awareness just slowly peels away the external envelopes. So the physical senses, the inputs from the physical senses, any of the five sensory faculties, and then of the emotional inputs that we have, feelings, sensations, etc., and then of the mental chatter, all of that gets detached from your awareness. So you enter into this primordial consciousness, this what they call in alchemy the materia prima, and that is the starting point. And then what typically happens is once you reach at that level, that all sense of thinking, of feeling, of perceiving externally sort of fades away. And then, you know, that can open up this inner channel where this inner spectrum becomes the new perception, perceptible universe so that one can experience. So that's how I would describe it. It's this trance where one goes inside oneself to get outside of oneself. And it's a process of filtering out the external influences, so the your inner self, you go to your core, what's called the noumen. That becomes a center of your consciousness. And then through the training, as I mentioned, this channel will open up this inner universe where, given your state of development, your inclinations, what you love becomes visible in another dimension.
Just out of curiosity, have you been able to achieve that state yourself?
Yes, definitely so.
Yeah, oh, cool. Cool.
Speaking from experience. That's not how Kremertz or Daffy describe it. They describe it as a gnosis. So it is, as I mentioned, as this transcendent state. But in terms of how I act, so I can activate that going for a walk, even you know, going for a long drive in the car, you know, one eye on the road and the third eye opens. Or in a meditative, this is probably a meditative state. If one wants to enter into some sort of psychonautic or psychonavigation, then lying on the back and in a dead man's pose at certain transitional times of the day or night, I find are conducive to enter into this state of mag easily, and then to have some of these transcendent experiences that are written about in the books.
Interesting. Now, your newest book is the Hermetic Book of the Dead. I think most people have probably heard of the Tibetan Book of the Dead. What is the Hermetic Book of the Dead about? I mean, the subtext title is Secret Rituals for Navigating the Astral Plane in the Afterlife.
Yeah, so the Hermetic Book of the Dead is a book I've been working on for the past 2 years, 2 to 3 years. It's coming out in the fall of this year, so it hasn't been released yet. It's all completed with Inner Traditions, the publisher. And basically, it's a compendium of different writings from myself, from other seekers, or we call Argonauts of Light, that are contemporary from Italy, as well as Kremertz and Daffy, and other people from the School of Miriam. And it provides both a doctrinal and practical means to enter into this astral plane and to experience one's consciousness in a manner that's not confined to one's physical self. And that leads to exploring what other past initiates in this tradition have talked about in terms of past life experiences, and what some of the books, the archival material talk about in terms of doctrinal expositions of how to prepare oneself for post-mortem realizations. So there's a philosophical component that explains what part of the human constitution is actually survives separation of the energetics body from the physical bodies. And Marco Daffy goes right very specifically into that. There's a series of articles called The Avatar, in terms of how consciousness when consciousness separates from the physical body, that the various states that it resides in, both latent and awakened, and how that they evolve into preparation for a new descent into a incarnation at a future time.
So, like, I know with the Tibetan Book of the Dead, that there are various states, there are bardos, they're called, of like what happens after you pass. And so this is a sort of a hermetic version of that, where it's sort of, how to prepare yourself, what happens when you die, and what sort of path to take afterwards. So, but is this is something to prepare yourself for death?
It's all of that. It's all of the above. It also includes a ritual from Marco Daffy's inner laboratory that he did with other initiates called the Pharaonic Circle, or the Andromeda Ring, that allows the seeker to conduct a psychurgic ritual, which is the weighing of the soul, the weighing of their karma before they actually transcend into another dimension, and in terms of what is lacking or what needs to be worked on prior to that significant event occurring. So it includes also a ritual with diagrams explaining each stage of the ritual, the weighing of the soul, the feedback that one potentially could receive when one goes through this ritual, to understand the quality of the material that one has when one is transitioning from one state of life to another. So, and it includes all that you mentioned as well. It's a very expansive book. So it's not just on one component of the Book of the Dead. It really covers a very vast, expansive doctrinal and practical exposition of these hermetic practices related to the post-mortem experiences.
So you've been researching all this stuff for decades, right? I mean, yeah. Since I'm new. I'm curious, how has this research and your experiences and what you've learned and what you've applied, how has it shifted your life? How is your life different from before you did all of this research?
I don't really, Sam, I don't really believe it's that different. I don't think I've changed that much. I'm just even more knowledgeable. The terms I put, I have this like radar in terms of what interests me. Mm-hmm. And what that radar kind of guides me in terms of where to look and what to find. So your inner disposition results in external circumstances, is what I believe. So you talked about earlier, I don't think you used the word, but synchronicities, in terms of,
yes.
And that's exactly what occurs, is that, you've heard the saying, the master arrives or comes when the disciple is ready. It's the same thing. The teachings come when you're ready to be open to them, to understand them, to make use of them, to make value of it. So I don't really, I, I, The personality I have right now is not any different than when the camera's off or when I'm in other scenarios. I'm pretty consistent with that. And I think that's part of the work, is that you, when you do that inner work, especially in the negretto or the black stage, when you confront with your disturbances, you really get a good sense of yourself. And then in the white state, when you clear that all out and you integrate yourself. So rather having, you know, different personality given different circumstances, or your mind's going off in a thousand different ways, you're much more monadic in terms of your being, in terms of yourself. So, and I kind of, so that's probably the biggest change. Prior to that, I was much more, not as, my sense of self wasn't as uniform and consistent as it is now. But in terms of my curiosity, in terms of what, you know, what interests me, that really has been pretty consistent.
And what do you hope readers get from these books? What do you hope someone takes away? Like, what are you looking to? Are you looking to inspire them? Are you looking for people to change their lives? Or is it really just a philosophical exploration?
Yeah, I'm not a preacher. I don't, it's none of that. I mean, knowledge sharing, it's, I think this material is valuable. It's valuable for me. It could be valuable for others, but people, readers, my interaction with readers, I'm very open with readers. If you, you know, check out my social media, send me a note. If you have my books and aspects of it, or you want further clarification, by all means, send me a note. I'm very open. And I've heard positive feedback. Oh, you're different. Most, you know, writers of this, of the occult, esoteric, they, you know, they have this distance. And I go, not like that. I don't have anything to hide. So readers come to my books on different reasons, some for curiosity, some for philosophical validation, some for, you know, they're looking for a new path, something that works, something that can be validated and on a personal level, and not just accepted at, you know, as words on a page. So there, you know, there are different, you know, the reason why I do is because it fulfills my curiosity, but it's a philosophy, it's a practice that I've done myself, and that I can validate and I can talk about through experience, experiential matters. And it's a safe one. I mean, it's safe in terms of you, in terms of the individual who's wants to explore this path, in terms of being integral to themselves, is listening to their conscience, is not, you know, is, you know, as what Dylan wrote about, you know, fool's trek where angels fail to tread.
Yeah, fear to tread.
You know, that, which is, I think, is a very valid point. There are aspects that people get addicted to theurgy and so forth. They want to have all these mystical experiences and so forth. And you do get that, but it's not, that's not your goal. That's not your, from my first person, it's not your goal. Your goal is evolution. Your goal is to transcend your limits. Your goal is to correct your deficiencies, your disturbances, to be a better person, and to share that goodwill, that good energy, that vibe with our fellow human beings. That's mine. It could be different things for other people. You know, I got other people saying, you know, I want to become an avatar. I want to be able to reincarnate. Can you get me on the, you know, help me out in that type of thing? That's your path. That's your path. I don't preach. I'm not into proselytizing.
Gotcha.
That's where I'm coming from.
I'm curious. You mentioned a couple of different organizations like the Fraternity of Miriam, and a couple of other groups that these older hermetics were part of. Are any of those groups still active? Is the lineage, did it continue or did it stop?
That's a good question. The Fraternity of Miriam is still around, primarily based in Italy. It's fragmented, so it's similar. It's not that dissimilar to the Golden Dawn, where you have a bunch of different groups competing with each other, and each, you know, some are claiming lineage from so and so. It really functionally ended with the death of Kremerz. You know, in the sense that the hermetic change. So what the Miriam was a series or a number of individuals who formed a hermetic chain to practice distance healing, to practice projection of this psychic energy. Once they get into that state of mag and they perform certain rituals, that they were able to collect that energy from the various members and project it to a centricum that would transfer it to individuals who had requested healing, requested during depressed, requested some sort of assistance. In a nutshell, that was the concept that Kremerz had in mind when he founded this hermetic brotherhood called the Fraternity of Miriam in the late 1890s. And there were, you know, there were a number of disturbances and egos came into play and fractions and so forth. Not uncommon that you read, but the material itself, the practices, the doctrines are transcend that. So, and that's what I've tried to bring to the public. Because I think they're very worthwhile. They're very unique. It's not, you know, a bunch of pieces that are taken from various different currents, you know, like Blavatsky or Theosophy or from the Golden Dawn. It was its own unique blend of hermeticism that was practiced and configured over centuries that have come down and that I've tried to bring to the English speaking world, because it could be a value for those who are looking for a path, or looking for understanding, or looking for a systematic way to explore some of that spiritual dimension that they may not being successful otherwise, or that another way to be able to channel some of these inner paths that may be valuable to individual seekers.
You know, just the fact that your books are getting published to me is in these times, in modern times, is kind of amazing. Would you say there's a renaissance happening of interest in traditions like Hermeticism?
It's funny because I think it goes in waves. In peaks and valleys. I think those of us who are closer to our age will remember there was a magazine that was published by Jay Kinney and Richard Smalley was the editor, called Gnosis.
Oh, Gnosis,
in the 80s and 90s. And that seemed to me to be a spiritual renaissance, as well as in the 60s and 70s with the works of Castaneda and Gurdjieff and so forth.
Yeah.
I think in this new century, this new millennium, I think it's kind of dipped a bit. I don't think it's as the scene is vibrant as it was in those preceding decades. Yeah. But there is, I mean, seekers you find of all times and ages. There are individuals, but I think they're more scattered and fragmented. There are these various groups, but again, there doesn't seem to be one dominant vehicle for communicating, articulating some of these spiritual truths. Not necessarily that needs to be the best way of doing it, but it seems to be a very much an open market, a market that's sort of a little bit below the radar. You know, doesn't freak people out, but enough around that those who are seriously interested in exploring spiritual paths can find a tradition or can find a mentor that can help them to answer some of the questions that they have about spiritual growth and spiritual knowledge.
Mm-hmm. If someone's new to this and they want to start reading and exploring, which book would you recommend they start with?
I have a few books. My first book called with by Manticore Press called The Magic Door. It covers this whole Italic Hermetic tradition from ancient Roman times right up to the modern day of Kremers and Daffy and so on. That would be, and it's a it cover it, that's a very much a general starting point. In terms of understanding the Fraternity of Miriam and a biography of Kremers, my book called The Hermetic Physician, the Teachings and Practices of Giuliano Kremers is a good one. If they want to explore a much more in-depth technical approach to gnosis, to spiritual practice, then Alchemical Hermeticism would be a great book. Those who are much more mature and want to know what were the actual rituals used in the Miriam, this book here called The Magic of Giuliano Kremers, that was just published a month ago. And then for really the hardcore, people again want to understand about atavistic resurgence, about avataric returns, then the book that's coming out in the fall, The Hermetic Book of the Dead, would be a good choice. So there's a wide spread between those who are new, those who are in the middle in terms of their knowledge and understanding, and those who are much more advanced seekers that want to know, how to. What are some of their practices for, astral traveling and preparing for, major turns in their development and evolution?
Well, as I get older, I'm definitely getting more interested in that end of
And
things,
again, it's not preachy. It's not
Yeah.
religious. It's written in a very much philosophical manner. It has also experiences in there.
Yeah.
From myself and various colleagues.
All right.
So it's a book for everyone. There's a book and then there's information for everyone based on what their needs and what they're looking for.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, David, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day for coming on my show. I could talk with you for hours. Unfortunately, I only have an hour to do this show. So,
Was
if
great.
people want to learn more about your work or get in touch with you, what's the best place for them to find you?
Yeah, they could either write to my publisher, Inner Traditions, or myself. Look on Facebook or Instagram or my other publisher, Manticore Press. It's probably easiest way just on Messenger. Send me a note, and I'd be happy to start a conversation.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, David, thank you so much. Take care. I really appreciate your
Great.
time
Thanks,
and I
Sense. Thanks for
appreciate your
having me.
work. I look forward to reading your books.
Great. Thank you.
And of course, thank you, my loyal listeners, for tuning in each week. Without you, there is no show. And don't forget, if you did miss any part of today's show, you can always catch the replay on talkradio.nyc or all over your favorite podcasting platforms, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio. Take care, everyone. We will talk to you all next week.
A spiritual seeker? Are you interested in expanded states of reality? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will dive into these topics with authors, teachers, researchers, and guides. Tune in at our new time, Wednesdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Wednesdays, 12 noon Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. for managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.